Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. The story of Donovan Smith guiding firefighters through this spring's Collier County wildfire to help save his white rhino, Walter, is almost mythical. Racing through flying embers and literally blistering temperatures, finding Walter in his pen through smoke using the sight of a rifle, rallying brush pumper trucks to keep his pen from going up in flames, refusing medical treatment for horrible burns until he was sure that Walter was safe. It's not the kind of story you typically think of coming out of sleepy Collier County, but just 4 months ago, that's what happened. And now, after a few months of recovery, Donovan himself is here to share that story. Donovan, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. We're talking with Donovan Smith, the man who braved a wildfire to save his white rhinoceros, Walter, in last spring's wildfire near Naples. Become part of the conversation by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we are at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Donovan, first, I think it came as somewhat of a surprise for a lot of people in Collier County and in the area to know that there's even a preserve in Collier County that's home to a rhino. The name of the place is Ingala. How did you come to have an animal sanctuary at all?
Well, I was born here in Naples. I'm a native Neapolitan.
Which is rare.
Yeah, my grandmother came here in the 50s as a school teacher. And I knew what I wanted to do from the young age of about 7 years old when I got a turtle for a birthday present. And I just knew that I wanted to handle and train exotic animals. And I started at 9 with my first mentor. He was 78, and he took me from 9 to 18, which is a huge piece of your life, you know, the rest of who you're going to be. He passed away, and I've had 5 mentors altogether and volunteered about 14 years of my life. The permits took about 30 years to do what I do, and I love Naples, so I built a wildlife preserve here in Naples, and, you know, just – I love every minute of it, you know?
Okay, but I had a turtle when I was a kid, and I really loved animals, and I just really loved lions. I thought they were great, but I never thought that I would grow up to have a lion.
Yes, I'm very blessed. You know, there's very few people out there that do what they want to do ultimately. They're there, you know, and I've met 85 billionaires now doing what I do, and they all told me the same thing. I wish I did what I love the way you do, and you know, at the end of the day, it's all in a matter of what you want in life. It's not an easy life. Christmas Day, I'm up taking care of animals, and you know, of course, the fire that you mentioned. You know, it was my responsibility to keep the fire department safe as much as them helping me save my animals. And that was a huge responsibility on my part.
Well, so tell me how you ended up with Walter the white rhino. How long has he been there, and where did he come from?
Well, all of the animals at Ingala, they all come from primarily unfortunate circumstances, and they're non-genetically diversified, meaning they're – what people don't know about an accredited zoo is it's a bank of genes for humanity. So an accredited zoo will have Sumatran tigers and Balinese tigers and Bengal tigers, and there's different tigers where the general population sees a tiger and they go, wow, it's a nice tiger. They don't understand that they're supposed to be kept in case they're depleted in the wild. They can be returned and regenerate the species, or at least have them on the earth. Our animals have primarily been the ones that didn't meet that criteria. And ever since I was a little kid, I'd been obtaining animals that, you know, they were going to be euthanized or just didn't fit anybody else's program. And so we spayed and neutered them so we didn't perpetuate more of them in captivity, because like I said, we are a sanctuary. However, in the last few years, I became accredited by the Zoological Association of America, and our main business is still environmental outreach. I'm an environmental educator, but animals started coming our way that were somewhere in between, and where Walter came from specifically. What I mean by that is there's zoo surplus out, like with the recession and things that we're being offered now. And we haven't gone down that path, but it may be somewhere we go to continue doing some of the work that we're doing. So Walter was given to me by a fellow. There's an organization. It's a billionaire guy that owns 2.2 million acres in the United States. And he raises rare animals to release back into the wild. We share the same veterinarian. I met the gentleman. You know, he liked what I do, and I made a joke about, hey, you know, I committed him on following his dream too.
You're like, so if you ever have a spare white rhino, let me know.
Yeah. Well, I was like, hey, good for you. I've worked with hippos and elephants. I've always wanted to work with the rhinos, and I think it's amazing that you get to. And he's like, how about that one? And
are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, okay.
And so the reason we have him and he didn't go back to the wild is because his genealogy is already well represented in the wild. So it's kind of a twofold. It's an insurance policy to his genealogy, and also the fellow that previously owned him wasn't doing any educational outreach. So in the business model at Inyala, we host events for the top producers or top companies of the world and then underwrite programs for kids. So we get exposed to the president of the United States, governors, and tens of thousands of kids and, you know, industry giants. And these are people that are movers and shakers of the world, really. And so when they meet one of our animals, it has character now. All of a sudden it has meaning. It isn't just enough to save rhinos. They meet Walter and pet Walter and look in his eyes and melt with Walter. And now all of a sudden they're moved and touched. And I could tell you story after story of people standing there looking at Walter with tears rolling down their eyes, confessing that they've shot these types of animals in their life at some point.
Really?
And just so moved by the experience, they didn't even want to eat dinner. They're just taken.
Yeah.
And you win them over by not, you know, telling – who am I to judge what they do? I have my own beliefs and my own, you know.
Yeah, it's like a mode of communication. Instead of preaching to someone and telling them everything that's wrong, well, here's something that's great and just go ahead and take a look at it and –
it's perspective.
Do with it what you will.
And exactly. And what we do and do well and what I've always done well is mitigate risk. I have a gift with animals. There's no question. But we mitigate risk and we do it very well. And by doing that, we're able to allow encounters with our animals and some things. And that's really – I mean I love the Natural Museum of Science. But it's – you know, you're looking at 100-year-old taxidermy and animals. It's just – it's not the same, you know?
Well, and Walter has a personality, I imagine.
Oh, there's no question. And all of our animals have been habituated to be around people. And so they enjoy seeing people as much as the other way around. And part of that is because we're not open to the public every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something like, oh, cool, you know, somebody came to see me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like we're excited to see them, you know, and then they do whatever they want to do within reason when nobody's around, you know.
So when the wildfire was coming, you got the order to evacuate the night before and the smaller animals, understandably easier to move. Was Walter unable to be loaded up on a trailer and moved out?
Well, you have to remember it's a constant triage because, you know, a giraffe and a rhino – on a giraffe weighs about 3,000 pounds and a rhino weighs about 6,500. And those types of animals of that size on a non-moving trailer in 98-degree temperature isn't really healthy either. Now, our animals are habituated to load and to travel. As a matter of fact, the day of the fire, I loaded a giraffe, two camels, and a Watusi cow and a zebra in under 20 minutes with planes flying over us, dropping pink fire retardant.
And I imagine the animals were stressed too.
Oh, it was like a war zone. And so we waited. You know, we started evacuating the night before and preparing. And then the morning of, we were in constant communication with fire officials. And in the morning, it had actually died down and turned. And it looked like it was going to be – we were going to be in the clear. And then the wind shifted and came back with a vengeance. When the fire first hit, I actually got burned three times that day. But the initial blast, so to speak, was about 30 miles an hour through the trees, treetop height. And it was like lighting a barbecue grill, but it was 42-acre barbecue grill. But that's – the best way I could describe it is when you hit the button and it just goes – that's
really
what happened. And so it came over top of me and I jumped into a ball. My face and my eyes and my ears and my nose and inside of my throat all got burned at that point. And I just balled in a ball. And then you stand up and you look and it's almost surreal because anytime you've experienced fire, it's not up in the trees. And so went up the tree, the little bit of tree that was left, and then turned around and came back down. So that was a whole new experience for me.
Well, it's a new experience for anybody. And you mentioned that the embers were like being in Braveheart with flaming arrows coming at you.
Yeah, nothing could prepare me for that. I always heard of embers. And we've all been around bonfires and you see a stray coal or a stray ash or – that's kind of what I expected. What I witnessed and experienced was – 100, probably 200 yards of flaming coals flying through the air. And when I say it's like Braveheart, it looked like flaming arrows arcing long before the orange flames ever got there. And 2 to 3 out of those would catch on fire immediately when they hit the ground. So about the time I came to the realization the garden hose wasn't going to fix this, that's when it blew in about 30 miles an hour, the main part of the fire. And it just – I can't even explain to you how dark it is in a fire and how loud it is. It sounds like a freight train coming. It's very surreal and really makes you appreciate the work that the firemen and all that do, because it's intimidating, and I'm not scared by much, you know.
Well, yeah, I imagine handling large cats and things. So you're hosing down the enclosures of some of the other big cats, and then the fire, did it start heading towards Walter's enclosure? Is that when you got on the four-wheeler?
Well, all the property, we just ran out of time on the evacuation, and all the fire just came at once. So what happened at this point is when the fire started coming down the trees, that's when I got on the four-wheeler to race to the fire department, because they were staged, and it jumped over top of them too. They were staged to make a stand in front of the preserve. So I knew that I needed a specific type of equipment called a brush truck, and I raced out to get it. But what I didn't know is in the tree line where the main part of the fire was on both sides of the road, it was up to 1,600 degrees Fahrenheit. So even being 150 feet away from that, the radiant heat is what really did me in. And there was nothing I could do at that point but just drive and pray and literally watch my skin bubble, blister, and blow off of my arms and legs. And my four-wheeler even tried to stall out because it wasn't getting enough oxygen. And it was if it would have, I have no doubt I wouldn't be here today. And the craziest thing happened at the end of the line of about a half a mile trek through this Armageddon was I heard this voice. You know, it was very surreal. And it's like, slow down. And I'm like, I'm thinking, hell no, I'm on fire, you know?
You're arguing with your inner voice.
Yeah, and it's like, slow down now. And I heeded the warning and I let off the throttle. And if I didn't, I would have ran about 50 miles an hour on the four-wheeler right into the very same fire truck that I was looking for that I didn't quite see in the smoke. So,
well, your eyes were burning too. It's not like you could really see either.
And at that point, I hopped on the fire truck with my rifle, and I told the firemen that I needed their help. I needed them to come in and help me.
So you had a rifle because not only were you trying to save these animals, but you also were concerned with keeping the firefighters safe in case something caught fire on one of these animals. I mean, these are wild animals.
Absolutely. It's it's fortunately or unfortunately, you know, I'm in charge, and so you know, I say unfortunately because it's at those moments when you figure out what you're really made of. And you're absolutely right. You know, I was, you know, to save the facility, even the firemen needed to know that it was safe to go in there for their own safety. And the last thing they need to do is chase a leopard or a rhino or whatever around in the middle of a fire. That's beyond their responsibility.
That should be a secondary concern.
So you're absolutely right. And these firemen that I got to they said, you know, the only hesitation they had was that to tell me that I needed medical attention, and it was Captain Heath and Firefighter Dilliard, and that was it. And I was like, copy that, but we've got work to do. And so I hopped in the engine with them, and one firefighter was on the bumper with a water cannon, and the other one was driving, and we started blazing a trail through 60-foot flames to get to Walter.
Well, not really blazing so much, but wetting down a trail,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
well,
then you get to the pen. Could you see Walter clearly or?
Well, I actually – when we started the trek through, Fire Chief Tobin came and got me, and we started walking through. We went to another part of the property and literally started checking each and every enclosure and each and every structure, and there was a team of men behind me, and so that's when I got burnt the third time because my skin was compromised, and walking just around the fire at that point, I didn't have the natural
The first few layers?
Correct. And the lesson in all this for me is to have a fire suit because, you know, I would do it all again, but I would have a fire suit. But I just, you know, I didn't really exactly know that I was going to be in that situation that morning. But now I'll just be – Murphy gets you when you're not prepared, you know.
Right.
So we went enclosure to enclosure and just cleared the way. And about that time, we converged on the area where my rhino was with the first unit that had made their way up there. And so then I had to, you know, look for him before they would go any closer. And it was a really, really tough deal because, you know, I love Walter and I love all of my animals. And, you know, I have to be the one that if it's loose, you know, unfortunately I would have to do whatever it takes. And if he was suffering, of course, nothing deserves to suffer. Especially under my hand, so
yeah,
I was
didn't
prepared.
Know what condition you were going to fight him in. Yeah,
I had no idea, but I had to be prepared for all that. And I scoped up my rifle through the flames. Couldn't find him. Kind of tracked and found him. The flames opened up, and I just took a big gulp in my throat with the big lump. And he was just as happy to see me. Rhino was making noise. It goes, and he was just as happy to see me through the scope. And I unchambered my rifle and just yelled out, you know, he's alive. And all the firemen, everybody cheered. And it was just – it was an amazing moment. And at that point, we were able to get up there to him. And we started one hose misting rain on him to cool him. And then another unit started putting the fire out that was all around him so he didn't get radiant burns the way that I did.
So once you saw him, he saw you at the same time. And he made the happy rhino sound.
Yes.
Poor thing. If you're just joining the show, we're talking with Donovan Smith of Inyala Animal Sanctuary about this spring's wildfire. He was badly burned when he was trying to save the wild animals that were unable to be evacuated, including Walter the White Rhino. You can become part of the conversation by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So you knew this whole time that you were hurt and you were swelling and you could see your cheeks swelling with your own eyesight. And the firefighters were telling you that you needed medical treatment. But why didn't you go?
You know, I had work to do. I've been hurt severely in my life before. I've broken my back. I've had both legs crushed in a tractor accident. You know, I hate being hurt. It's terrible. And the older I get, I start to fall like a ripe watermelon, you know?
Yeah.
But I, you know, I needed to just get done. Needed to feel secure and safe as long as I could push my body. And we can push ourselves a lot further than we ever imagined. And not trying to be, you know, crazy or anything, but just like I knew, you know, I knew when it was my time. And of course, they're going from a liability standpoint and a critique in some book that says, you know, when you have these symptoms, you know, you need medical attention immediately. And I did, but I was under the opinion another 30 or 40 minutes, however long, 15 minutes, whatever I could make. I ended up making it 40 minutes, and then I was put on a helicopter and med-flighted out.
So then once you surrendered to the medical authorities, I guess I can call them, what was going through your mind when you were on that helicopter flight?
Well, my kids was real heavy on my mind because they were actually you know, my responsibility that day. So that was the first thing. And second, I was strapped to a board and you know, surrendered in a helicopter, and I'm thinking this is the most expensive helicopter ride I ever have, and I can't even look out. I want to see the fire.
You didn't get to see any of it. So did you ever regret going through that fire, through all the pain of having the skin grafting and things like that?
No. It's like I said, it was one of the most painful things that I've ever been through. I could tell you from personal experience that the first 3 days, they debride you, which means there's three guys that pull it, well, three people, I should say. In my case, it was three guys that pull and tug all the blisters and rub and scrub all the raw skin off of you. And even with morphine, it's one of the most painful things that you can endure. And after those 3 days, then you do it yourself. And I can tell you that once you do that to yourself and you go through that experience, whatever bothered you in life, whatever personal drama, whoever's getting on your nerves, you know, whatever you're dealing with is no big deal after that. It's just – I mean, I laugh about it. It was horrible going through it, but it's amazing how much stronger that I am now because I endured and I've met people that have endured so much more than I did, but it really gave me a sense of how tough it is. And then the grafts, once they did the grafts, I had several hundred staples holding my skin. They harvested my own skin. from my right leg, I ended up with 20% second-degree burns on my left leg and left arm. And they put the skin on there and staple it. They actually put cadaver skin over it to protect it. And then they lock you out. So my arm and my leg, I couldn't move, only my fingers and toes. And you're like that for a couple of weeks. So that gets real old real quick.
You can't. That had to drive you crazy because you seem kind of like an active person.
Yeah, no question. But, you know, it gives you time to reflect for sure. And, you know, you figure out what's important and that stuff because you're just stuck there thinking. And
forced introspection, right?
Yeah. And it's you know, there's a lot of gifts that came out of this for me. And, you know, so I'm grateful to find the high road. And that's who I am. But I'm not grateful that I got burned, but I'm grateful for the lessons that have come out of it for me because I'm a much better person now.
It seems like it changed you.
Oh, there's no question. And one of the biggest things that changed me was that unconditional love without any expectation that came out of the community and school kids all around the world. And it was somewhere around 400 messages a day coming in for me and about 150 people trying to visit the hospital, which all had to be turned away because they were worried about infection.
Yeah, burn units, they don't really like having people filing through.
But the gifts and and it didn't even have to be anything monetary. It's just the prayer and the positive support and the energy. I mean, I give all the glory to God because I'm 8 weeks ahead of anything the hospital saw as far as healing goes, like
you
the best case scenario.
Really quickly.
I'm still healing. You know, my burns that I have now, they are raw. They feels like the worst sunburn you ever had. I'm very heat sensitive. Like I could feel somebody light a match across the gymnasium.
Really?
And of course, I'm an outdoorsman. And so 20% of me that's skin grafted will never sweat again. So I'm learning how to deal with, you know, heat, the heat absorption and just my normal lifestyle. But I'm getting through it, you know.
So I understand you made some connections while you were in the burn unit.
I did. You know, the irony of being in the burn unit with a Baron Collier graduate, which I graduated from Baron Collier, ended up being the executive assistant to my surgeon. And my surgeon's name ended up being Dr. Smith. And so he came, you know, to personally meet me and all that and approached me about doing some work with burnt children. And I was like, absolutely, I'm on board. And now we're progressing to burnt soldiers. And what there was is there's a Navy SEAL named Ryan Parrott. And Ryan met a Marine that had came back that had his face burn off. And he asked him, he said, well, what is the military doing for you? And the guy said, this is it. And so Ryan said, that's absolutely pathetic. And he started a foundation called Sons of the Flag. And a surgeon from they get private donations to repair these soldiers to the best of medicine. And somebody in California was doing the work. And he's retired now and taking an advisory position on the board. And my surgeon, the surgeon that repaired me, is taking over the work and has approached me about doing some work with soldiers and rehabbing them with my animals because the animals don't care if you have a face or not, you know, whether fixing them.
Yeah.
So I'm just blown away by the doors that are opening and just delighted. It's in the infancy stages now, but it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to help with recovery and also with maybe some PTSD issues too with animals. They really help.
Quickest way to ground yourself is to get back into nature.
Exactly. So how long were you away from the sanctuary?
About 2 months because I had a month in the burn center and then a month in home treatment and care. And, you know, and it was killing me because I felt good, you know, at some point.
But you just couldn't move. You weren't allowed.
Well, I wasn't. I mean, a very minimal and, of course, the infection part of it is, you know, always something, especially with animals and burns, you know.
What did it feel like the day that you went back, though?
It was awesome. I mean, it was great to get back, of course, by then. And I was so proud of my staff because they had to unload all the animals without me and take care of everything. And they were doing events and, you know, just dealing with, you know, all the trauma from the burn in so many ways. And, of course, the facility will heal. The trees will grow back. To a certain extent, we've lost a lot of trees because it was so hot.
But you didn't lose any buildings.
Nothing of any significance. We lost – there's certain things that we lost that we didn't know. Like you go to plug in to a panel and the panel's all melted or like the vinyl coating all melted off of the chain link fence. So it's starting to rust now all over. You turn on a water hose and it doesn't work and you find out the pipe's all melted in the ground. And so there's tens of thousands of dollars of stuff that we just, you know, you just – it's not like going, oh, we lost a building. You know what I mean? But we did – we lost a couple little structures, but they were triaged in the fire.
And no animals were hurt?
No animals were hurt. No, we definitely – now my neighbor's house across the street burnt to the ground. My heart goes out to them. My neighbor's house behind me burnt to the ground and one, two houses down. And I am 100% certain that if we didn't make the stand that we made in the fire, we would have lost all the structures. We would have lost everything. So inadvertently, by being there for the animals, we saved the facility too, you know?
Yeah, but your main point was to be there for the animals.
Well, and that's the other side of evacuating. I mean, you should always do what the officials tell you. And our circumstances were different than the average homeowner that would be told to leave and refuse.
Yeah, you're not just packing up
the
house
cat. We didn't refuse. We had a written fire plan with the officials for years.
Yeah, I understand that you had a lot of preparation before this fire even hit or years ago.
The problem is when they bring in these districts, fire districts from other areas to help on such a large fire, nobody has time to go read the plan. You know, they just at that point – some of the firefighters that have 18, 20 years experience said this was the most intense fire that they had ever been a part of. And it was just it was a catastrophic event. I mean, it was like there was no planning that you could do for – because there was two heads of the fire converging on our property. And one of the fire heads actually split off and came up and snuck around from behind on the ground.
So it sounds like a military assault.
Oh, it was – and not to mention one of our neighbors is a nursery and the fire got into their potting shed and all the potting shed was filled with petroleum-based pots, flower pots. And so it supercharged it just before it blew over our way because it was just super, super high temperatures.
Wow.
So it was crazy, but it just was supposed to be that way, I guess.
So where are you in your healing process now? They said it was going to take up to a year, but
– yeah, I have a compression suit that I wear. I'm waiting for another one because, you know, it's – I have to wash it every day in the heat and – but I keep that on. That will help me scar from the inside instead of on the outside. And I'm, you know, rebuilding the facility. And as I mentioned, I'm learning to deal with the heat and, you know, just so as far as healing goes, they'll stay about a year on that compression suit. Yeah. And I go back to the burn center like once every 2 months now to get checked and everything. And just everything works. So I'm happy for that.
That's good.
And I'm itching like crazy now, which is something new.
But itching is kind of part of healing, right?
It's good. It's all the nerves are reconnecting and all that stuff. But oh my gosh, I itch. I'm buying coconut oil by the case, you know.
Luckily, they sell it everywhere now. So, all right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. But to our guest, Donovan Smith with Inyala Animal Sanctuary in Naples, I want to thank you for sharing an incredible story with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
We have links on our website for people to connect with Inyala and to get more information about what all you do there, too. Our show today was produced and directed by Matthew Smith. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.